It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning. Welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, and I'm your host this morning. Today, we're going to be talking about training. Training in the government and in around the government, something that has seems to have become a bit of an endangered species here lately with all of the cutbacks in Congress. And we have three real experts who spend their daily lives working in and around training in the federal government. I'd like to welcome to Fed Talk Lisa Speer from Federal Management Partners. Lisa, welcome to Fed Talk.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Carrie Bluston from the American Society for Training and Development. Carrie, welcome to Fed Talk.
Hi, Bill. Thank you.
And our Jeanette Arquetta from Grant Thornton. Jeanette, welcome.
Good morning, Bill. Thanks.
And you all, tell us a little bit. We'll start with you, Carrie, from ASTD. Tell us a little bit about what you do at ASTD and what ASTD does in and around the federal government in the training arena.
Sure, Bill. ASTD is the American Society for Training and Development, and it is the world's largest association dedicated to workplace learning and professional development. And we have members from over 100 countries, 120 chapters throughout the U.S. And really what we focus on through a variety of means is to help set the standards of excellence in the training industry. So we have a certification institute which provides CPLPs, or Certified Professional in Learning and Performance. And really our focus is to widen the profession's role in linking learning and performance to individual and organizational results. So through my role as the director of government and a publisher of our government journal, The Public Manager, which is a quarterly about federal leadership that works, I work to make sure that those same standards of excellence in training that are implemented throughout the industry are really tailored to the government's unique needs and challenges, and that they're able to implement the same standards.
And Jeanette Arquetta from Grant Thornton, tell us what you do at Grant Thornton that concerns training.
Well, Grant Thornton is a management consulting firm. I work out of the Global Public Sector Division, and we focus primarily on state, local, federal, and a little bit of international government work. We also do financial management, performance management, and my area is organizational improvement. I'm also a member of the Human Capital Community of Practice, which is a group of practitioners that are all focused on improving human capital in the federal space. So that's everything from training, leadership development, strategic planning around human capital, talent management, you name it. We dabble in a lot of those places for our federal clients.
Seems like you say things like training, leadership development, talent management. Seems like to me those are all somewhat the same thing. I mean, you have to take people and take them from one place to get them to another place that they wouldn't be without some kind of program.
That is true. They're very similar, and there's a lot of overlap. But when you're thinking strategy, you're thinking long term. When you're thinking training, it could be short term or long term. And when you're talking about things like succession planning, how do you fill skill gaps through training? So there is a lot of overlap, but our role is to help our clients identify those points of overlap and where they're different, and identify solutions to help them get to where they need to be.
And Lisa Speer from Federal Management Partners. Lisa, tell us about yourself a little bit, and also Federal Management Partners, what you all do.
Sure. Thanks, Bill. I'm a managing consultant with Federal Management Partners, and we're a strategic human capital consulting firm, and we've been partnering with federal agencies primarily for over 20 years to help accomplish their mission through effective management of their human capital. And we offer a wide range of human capital consulting services, including strategic human capital planning, workforce analysis, organizational effectiveness like change management, strategic communications. We design and implement HR solutions such as performance management systems, career development programs. We do focus on using innovative technology and tools in how we deliver our services, such as career mapping, surveys, dashboards, automated workload models. And we also focus on learning solutions, which is why I'm here today. We design and implement employee and leadership development programs and deliver training. And this part of our practice has really taken off over the past 10 years. We have recently developed a Center of Excellence for Learning and Development to focus on cutting-edge trends in instructional design and delivery of training.
Okay, so we have a broad background, and I know two of our guests have broader training experience than just the federal government. Lisa, your federal management partners focus mostly on the federal government. So I'd like to ask Carrie and Jeanette, what do you think is happening in the federal government now with some of the budget cutbacks? And is do you think that's short-sighted as that's compared to what you see in the other areas of the economy and the private sector, the other parts of the public sector? Mm-hmm.
Sure. I can actually talk about some of our data from the ASTD's State of the Industry report, where agencies are actually spending money. So if you look at the big picture, the training industry is about $17.5 billion across the entire U.S. That means about $12,029 per employee is spent. But if you take that and look at the actual spend in government, that is roughly $872 per person versus the $1,229 across industry. What's interesting about that is actually the healthcare and telecom industries pull up the number across industry, and government spend is much closer to what you would see in manufacturing and transportation. One other interesting part from that survey is to look at where the money is being spent, the training dollar. So cross industry, the majority of the spend is on management and supervisory training, and that has actually seen an increase of about 2% from the past year. So it's about 12.8%. Versus looking at the government data, the highest spend, 29%, which is a significant difference, is actually on individual skill professional development.
And that's technical training?
Technical training. Right. Thank you. versus the management and supervisory training is second in line, but it's at 14% for the government spend.
So how does that compare to the private sector? Is that about the same?
No, the private sector is their biggest spend is on management and supervisory
and
training.
And it's what percentage again?
It's 12%.
12%. But you said 14% of the federal sector.
14% in the federal sector.
Mm-hmm. So that's about the same then?
It's about the same spend, but the government's largest spend of 29% is on the professional skill development.
Whereas in the private sector, it's on mostly on managers and supervisors.
Right.
And what do you see? And you said you do with a lot of state and local. Do you see a cutback there as well?
I personally work primarily in the federal, so I can't speak to the state and local, but I can say that it is a reality for our clients that they are seeing budget cuts in areas of training, areas of travel, which impact where they can be trained or where they can attend trainings and conferences, workshops. So it is a big concern. We, Grant Thornton, partnered with the Partnership for Public Service and released the Chief Human Capital Officers Survey again this year. It's the fourth one. And CHECOs identified, 72% of them identified that workforce reductions due to budget cuts, which means less people to do more work. So it facilitates the need for more training to make sure that the folks taking on new responsibilities are appropriately aligned with the tasks through skill sets, whether they be technical training or soft skills in training.
And Lisa, from management, mm-hmm. Federal Management Partners, you focus on the federal government, and you said that you, especially in the last 10 years, have seen a big increase in your training business. But what kind of trends have you seen in the last few years as Congress gives agencies fewer and fewer resources?
Right. Well, there are a few trends. One is that we definitely are seeing a lot of requirements for manager and supervisor training. Response to OPM training policy, a lot of managers coming in from outside of the government who aren't familiar with what's necessary to be a federal supervisor, and also for succession planning purposes as folks retire. I think the way that the focus has changed in the last few years with the budget issues is that there's a real focus on evaluation and seeing the impact and the return on investment of training. And so we're, you know, a lot of our agencies that we're working with are looking for ways to conduct not just the evaluation of how was the class itself, but what is the impact? What was the learning? How is it affecting the performance of the organization?
Okay. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm joined today by Carrie Bluston from ASTD, Jeanette Arquetto from Grant Thornton, and Lisa Spear from Federal Management Partners. And we're talking about government training. We'll continue our discussion right after this break from our sponsor.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com. Then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford. I'm here with Jeanette Arquetto, Carrie Bluston, and Lisa Spur. We're talking about training, and we're talking about training from three companies that provide a lot of training to the federal government, and they have a lot of experience and perspective. If you would like to participate in our show, give us a call, 1-877-936-9333, or you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So one of the things that I've heard about, and I actually saw a demonstration on it, is a program that's called My Career at VA. Can you tell us, at least I think you know a little bit about that program. Can you talk about that? It's very impressive and very, I thought, a very very new and dynamic internet-based program that's very valuable to employees.
Yes, thank you, Bill. Yes. FNP has been working with our team and with the VA Learning University, or VALU, to develop an interactive career development tool or a set of tools. And we began the project in January of 2011, went live in October of 2011, and we're about to implement our third release. And what it is a portal to help individuals inside or outside of the VA explore career paths with the VA. And there's a few different tools that make up the website or the portal. First is a career planning process with career guides, so individuals can learn more about different occupations at the VA, the required competencies, and how they might go about pursuing those positions. And then there's a set of tools to help them kind of chart their path. My favorite is the Career Fit tool, which is a questionnaire that users fill out to indicate their work interests and preferred work environment. So there's two parts to the questionnaire. So for example, the work interests questionnaire may ask, do you like initiating and leading projects? Do you like working with data, clear procedures, and standards? And then the work environment piece asks questions like, do you like being physically active on the job? Do you like having to meet deadlines under time pressure? And so those create a profile and then identifies opportunities and positions that would be a good fit based on those work interests and preferred work environments. So we have profiles for the different occupations and positions that are then matched up with the individual.
And it's really kind of neat because if you can actually see the computer program work, people can go and explore different jobs and see, is it realistic for them? Would they like it or not like it? It's information that really has never been available in one place before. So it's quite innovative. And Jeanette, I think you said you saw a similar program that in another agency?
Yeah, so NASA is one of our Grant Thornton clients. We've been in the NASA space for approximately 8 years. And NASA has a leadership model that includes 20 desired competencies. And what they've done is they've identified through the use of online systems, you can click on a competency and it'll give you an idea of activities, trainings, books, resources that you can take or that you can participate in order to help you build those competencies. So they're looking at it from a strategic approach and helping people find their gaps and their competencies and really build to them, and also to support the strengths that they have so that they're encouraged in several arenas.
So this seems like a lot of it, this is training somewhat, career development, but it's all internet-based. Is this the trend? Is this what's happening?
I think so, Bill. I think, particularly in the case of the VA, they're such a large organization, and so they're really using this tool both for retention and recruitment. So from the recruitment standpoint, you know, how do folks outside of the VA learn about the VA? And so naturally, the internet is the perfect medium for that.
It's also less expensive, and you don't have travel expenses.
Yes.
And things like that.
Sure.
I mean, is that becoming a big problem, you think, in training, that you can't get people to one location to have them have face-to-face training? And is there a loss of value in not having face-to-face training, doing things on the internet? I'd like to have maybe get a little discussion about that point.
I think it makes sense from a value perspective that it is a way to reduce the cost of trainings through without the travel. However, what we've seen NASA do is they've also, and other clients, they've been able to use web technology to video conference folks from remote locations into the classroom. So you can have a participant group of about 40 or whatever is the appropriate size for that course with a teacher in front of them, facilitating them, leading through the lessons, but bring in subject matter experts and guest speakers to enhance the learning and reinforce the skill sets that they're learning through media that's available to them.
I know when people are on webinars and are just telephone conferences versus being in a meeting face-to-face, there is a temptation, I think, to pay less attention. And, that's human nature. Have there been any studies done on that, people learn better in a classroom environment versus, participating in a webinar?
Bill, what we see at ASTD is that what is important is successful training, whatever format it is, and that online training, even webinars where you have opportunity for distraction, can be just as effective if it's done right. So like the other guests mentioned, online training is definitely on the rise with budget cuts, but we don't see it being less effective. In fact, really encouraging use of mobile technology for training on the rise. The military in particular has done a great job at using mobile technology in a really effective way, either on-demand training where they have soldiers in the field being able to respond to medical crises because they have an app on their phone which tells them exactly what to do to respond to a sprained ankle, and then medical personnel doesn't need to be called in, or Twitter feeds that tell them what's happening with all of their other colleagues throughout the area on real time. So online technology can really be an effective tool.
So we're talking about having technology available which has information that you can get and call up on demand versus sitting in a classroom and learning something that you might apply when you're in a situation where you might need it 6 months or a year later. It's a very different way of thinking about training.
Right. Also, online can be webinars. It can be something that you take out of the classroom, you re-record for another session where people weren't able to be there. Or as Lisa mentioned, it enables you to bring in other subject matter experts that you just wouldn't have access to if you had to continue to rely on in-person training.
There are also new technologies where it can be more interactive to try to get to that classroom feel of interaction between the participants. And so one example is Adobe Connect, and we use that a lot with performance management training that we do for the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, so that folks can not only see a webinar and see an instructor, but they can participate, then they can interact, they can...
How does that work? How does that interaction take place?
You can have documents online that folks can... add into and comment on. There's also, opportunities to ask questions, to do it through chat or verbally on the webinar.
And how do you make sure when you're having a live webinar that people really are paying attention and they're not just putting in the time just
right
to get credit for the training? Is there some way to do that?
I think a lot of times, because the agencies make the investment in the training, they make the investment in their people for these trainings, that people do pay attention, that they're not in a classroom just to sit there. From time to time, you may get someone that's just checking the box. But I do believe that they recognize the importance that training can be in their career growth and personal growth when it comes to the skill sets they can pick up.
Of course, somebody can sit in a classroom and tune out and not pay attention in a classroom as well.
True. I think if when you look at results from employee satisfaction surveys and the employee viewpoint survey that OPM does, the desire for training, for development, for career progression is always one of the you know, big, most significant findings. And so I think there's a hunger and there's a thirst for it as long as it's training that's meaningful to the individual. And I think that's the critical piece is if you're forcing folks to go to mandatory training, that's one thing. But if you're really looking at what training does this person need to progress in their career, what would be valuable to them, you're more likely to have their attention.
Now, conferences are not completely gone. I think, Carrie, you've got one coming up that that you're, I think, busily working on. Can you talk about that a little bit?
We do, Bill. It's an ASTD and the Public Manager Conference. It's called Government Workforce Learning Innovations, and it will be in D.C. in October. And the thrust of the conference is to talk about a lot of the challenges that we're discussing here today. So how do you really be innovative in training in a constrained budget environment with an administrative transition possibly happening? And how do you implement strategic planning from a learning perspective that really links back to the vision and mission of the organization? So we will have subject matter experts coming throughout the government that are leading edge in this field and talking about how to solve some of these challenges. One other unique thing about this conference is that we recognize learning doesn't just happen by nature of a PowerPoint with someone standing up at the front of the room and talking at you. So with this conference to really engage learners, we've made it an unconference. So we don't have speakers, we have subject matter experts, and they are led by a professional moderator through a conversation in a session. So people who attend the conference really get to know people and take that learning outside of the conference, as well as have a real conversation with the experts.
And the people who participate in the unconference workshops also offer information and participate in the learning process themselves.
Right. It's a real key value of learning that the expert isn't always the only expert in the room. So we want to make sure that there's a diverse representation across agency and from all levels of the learning field.
And when is your conference?
It's October 24th. It's at the museum in Washington, D.C.
And how does somebody sign up for it?
The website is governmentworkforce.org.
Governmentworkforce.org. That's simple enough. And but that's a conference that is still taking place. Are you seeing overall, do you see fewer and fewer conferences taking place around government and some of these internet substitutes taking their place?
I don't know, Bill. I know that probably a lot of agency conferences have been cut. We experienced that with one agency that we had responded to a proposal to speak at a conference, and then they nixed it 2 years in a row. So we definitely experienced that. But I think government-wide, things like the Federal Workforce Conference, for example, next April, we're going to be speaking about My Career at VA. And so that's happening. You know, there's an Excellence in Government conference, I think, that took place yesterday. So I do think that opportunities to bring folks together from across government are still occurring.
Because it does seem to me that it's that one of the values of these conferences are for people to meet each other and to network and share ideas. And that does happen at conferences. So I don't think they should be eliminated altogether. And yet there seems to be some movement in Congress to cut way back on conference spending, especially the travel portion of it. So does anybody have any comment on what OPM is doing in training? And they seem to be very involved in cutting back on some of the expenses and making training more accessible to agencies.
Well, I can speak to what they're doing around training for human resources professionals. Chief Human Capital Officers Council, or the CHICO Council, has developed the HR University, which is a clearinghouse for HR training for HR professionals across the government, and it's really been identified as a critical need. And so it gives people an opportunity rather than having to go out on their own and find training and not know if it's good quality or have to pay more than they need to. They can go to the OPM HR University and learn about what's available to them.
And is that working pretty well from what you can?
Yeah, I believe so. I think it is. You know, there are other efforts as well. The Society for Human Resource Management has recently expanded their programs to look at federal human capital and federal HR professionals and their needs for development, because in the past they've been more kind of focused on the private sector.
Okay, we're going to stop to take a short break. When we return, we'll continue our discussion. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford. I'm here with Lisa Speer from Federal Management Partners, Carrie Bluston from ASTD, Jeanette Arquetto from Grant Thornton. We're talking about training and training in the federal community, which has gone through some changes in recent years. And I would like to talk about a subject that gets discussed a lot, and that's the development of management and supervisors. Even the whole idea of how do you identify somebody? How do you develop the soft skills? How do you teach them to be a good manager and a supervisor? And I know there's been a lot more emphasis placed on this. OPM has some regulations. There's been a lot of discussion in Congress about mandating it. I think to a certain extent, OPM already requires it. But my observation is that agency performance on supervisory development is somewhat uneven. Can you all, Lisa, do you want to...
Sure.
Let's get started with that.
Yes, thanks, Bill. As I mentioned earlier, we're definitely seeing a lot of need for manager and supervisor training. And as far as who's targeted, it could be sort of one of two ways. One is that they look at new supervisors within the agency, new supervisors coming from outside of the agency, and supervisors coming in from the private sector, and the sort of different needs that each of those groups has. And there's sort of general supervisor training. And so the basics of being a federal supervisor, the laws and regulations, employee relations and labor relations. But then also a lot of work we do is around performance management. We're seeing a lot of need for that, helping managers write the objectives, helping employees understand how to write self-reported accomplishments. But then specifically for managers, how to give effective feedback, because not everyone is very good at that.
And how to encourage them to actually do it.
Right, exactly.
That's the big problem, because there's a lot of avoidance.
Right. I mean, you could have the best performance management system in the world, but if the managers aren't implementing it well, then it's not going to be successful. And so we've seen requirements for training on how to have difficult conversations. You know, I think people shy away from having that. It's only human nature. And so giving managers the tools to know how to prepare, how to have those conversations in a very objective and effective way.
And also how to give good feedback and to make sure
exactly
that you give good feedback, because that just encourages mm-hmm. even better performance.
Right. And with a lot of remote work and telework happening, it's harder even for managers to to know how to give feedback. And so
I'm sure this is what your company does, Lisa, but I keep hearing that there's a lot of managers that still aren't receiving that training and development.
Right.
Are you seeing that as well? We're seeing where they are training, but maybe Jeanette, that's a better question for you, since you did this, just work with the Partnership for Public Service on this CHECO survey. How is the training for managers and supervisors? How well is that being accomplished?
The CHECO survey actually interviewed approximately 55 individuals, both CHECOs and HR leadership professionals. And from that survey, we heard that only about 18% of those interviewees felt that supervisors and managers had the soft skills they needed to be successful in the workplace.
And what's a soft skill?
Soft skills, leadership, coaching, engagement, retention, anything that comes along with motivating and getting your vision and your goals for your team coordinated with strategic performance for your organization, as well as individual performance metrics that folks are working towards. That number in 2010 was 32%. And so
it's dropped.
It has dropped. I personally don't know what the main drivers were for that drop, but the reality is it's there. And so our clients and how we're approaching it at Grant Thornton is it's not just about the training. It's really about the broader picture. It's about development of folks to get them from one level to the next. It's about career experience, taking what you learn in the training and applying it to your job, either using a model where some of the agencies provide a case study that's coming directly from one of their organization's programs saying, we've identified this as an issue. How would you as a leader organize your team around finding solutions for this? So those types of soft skills, leading through change. This is a time of budget cuts, of workforce changes, of multi-generational workforce where technology is playing a larger and larger role. So how do you manage that, and what types of skills do you need to not only know but be able to apply in the workplace? So the training is a component, but it's touching upon a much broader spectrum of needs at that supervisory and managerial level.
So one of the things that I hear, and I was able to participate in a task force that developed the GEAR project. Are you all familiar with the GEAR program on performance management, which has a strong training component with it? But I kept hearing over and over this common occurrence in the federal government of you take your best technician and you promote them to the manager, and you don't necessarily know if they have those soft skills, Jeanette, that you were talking about, and then you don't train them to be a supervisor or manager. The hard skills are the soft skills, and then they fail. And then they're viewed as not being, the government as having a deficit on supervisory manager, skills. So what can be done to identify not just the best technician, but somebody who has an aptitude to be a leader, to at least be a good supervisor? Yeah, are there tools available for that?
I think it changes agency to agency. Different agencies need different things, obviously. I think part of the strategic planning process around human capital is a way to identify those gaps early on, where you see retirements happening, where you see attrition happening, and then understanding what skill sets will be missing from your workforce and strategically developing trainings that touch upon those. When it comes to the softer skills, it's, I think, again, using a combination of training, coaching, maybe rotational experiences. So you're looking at not just what's happening in your little corner of the world, but also at the broader agency level to understand the bigger picture.
Go ahead, Lisa.
I'm sorry, if I could just add on to that. Mm-hmm. I think, part of it, and I know one of the findings in the CHECO survey was around the civil service, structure in general. And I think for a lot of folks, in order to get promoted, in order to move up and progress in their career, they have to become a supervisor or a manager, and not everyone wants to, and not everyone is good at that. And so I think you know, looking at ways to provide.
But everyone wants that promotion.
Everyone wants that
promotion. Because it means more money.
Well,
right?
Sure. So, you know, looking at ways to either give other options for promotion that are more along the technical track, but or and then, of course, also better preparing those who maybe it wasn't their first choice, but once they get into it, they might enjoy it if they have the proper training.
There's a lot of discussion about developing a different kind of civil service system. But I'm not sure how many years we are away from
right.
away from that. Carrie, I did want to ask you, most of your work is on training the trainer or working with the trainers who actually have developed training programs for other people. What do you see them doing to help have more effective supervisory management development?
Really encouraging a use of blended learning, especially in the multi-generational workforce that's really affecting government even more. That means don't just rely on the tools that you're used to. If you have a particular manager or supervisor who learns a different way or the people in their group learn a different way, a trainer needs to be adept at using all the different methods and sometimes adjusting a particular part of the training to a different method to meet that individual, whatever generation they are.
Can you give me some examples of how people learn differently? I mean, I'm used to sitting in a classroom and having somebody lecture me.
Sure. So people who are of a newer generation in the workforce might not want to sit through a longer training. There's definitely a different attention span. And that's when online training and breaking it up into different modules can be really effective. That's where making sure that you stay on top of mobile learning is effective. And we also are seeing a trend in government, which is specifically coming from the military, towards very effective use of virtual and simulation training. The military does it, of course, because they need to test people in crisis situations, and it's much more expensive for a lot of ways to put them in an actual crisis situation. But even outside of the military, virtual training can be really effective for managements and supervisors to have a pretend discourse when it's not actually affecting your individual employee as a manager.
Okay, one of the things that I've noticed about the federal government, the civil service, is when they talk about manager supervisory development, you know, we've already talked about it's somewhat uneven, but the military, as Carrie was just talking about, has very, very rigid supervisory management development, particularly among its officers, and I think even among its non-commissioned officers, where you go to a school for a certain amount of time, and it's very regimented, and we don't do that in the civil service. Do you all have ideas and comments on what we could do to perhaps be more like the military, or do we need it?
Well, I think probably the fact that it's a life or death situation in many cases with the military, and certainly in more of the command and control of, you know, you will go to training, you will do this. Obviously, that's different from in the civilian world. But I do think that identifying what impact managers and supervisors do have, not only on their employees, but on the mission of the organization through their employees. So, you know, again, their technical skills are very good, clearly, that's how they got promoted. But how they manage their employees and their own and their development has a direct effect on the success of the organization's mission.
Okay, I would like to talk a little bit about something I know that there may not be a lot of information about, but CIO.gov recently released a case study on the Social Security Administration and their new internal management certificate program. Do any of you know about that? Can we talk about that a little bit?
Well, I've read the study, and I'm not personally familiar with other internal program management training programs in government, but I do know that that is a critical skill set that's lacking. And I've worked with IT department in a federal regulatory agency where that was their most critical skill gap. And looking at
this is management skills in the intelligence or in the CIO community.
Right. Well, program management is sort of a term of art. And so, you know, we think of project management, program management, but in fact, there is a certification in program management called the PMP. There's other certifications as well. And it's a very particular methodology that is used for managing large scale programs, most often in the IT world, but we're seeing more of it coming up in HR and finance and other organizations, really to, I don't know if you've heard of a PMO or program management office, and that's sort of where you would find program managers with these skills.
And so you get this certificate, what do you do with it?
well, hopefully you're in a position where you're doing that sort of work.
And you put it on your resume.
Yeah,
it's
a very desirable skill set. I mean, we've had clients say, hey, do you know anyone with a PMP? You know, we really need them. We are interested in folks with their PMP. So it's a really valuable skill because it is lacking in the government.
I would agree with Lisa. I personally am a PMP, and I know that a number of our clients, we see requirements coming through the request for proposals and some of the statements of work for our client work, where they are asking for credentialed PMPs. And so it's the standard methodology for managing projects, everything from stakeholder management to scope, schedule, financial, risk. So it's core components of management that can actually be applied to any project, not just a federal project. And so having some standards around how projects are being managed across agencies is smart because it gives a better guide for how do you gauge performance of a poorly performing project or a well-performing project.
And so how does someone become a PMP?
There's certification programs. I went through the Project Management Institute's, the PMI certification program, but there are other certifications out there. And I'd be really curious to see if what the Social Security Administration is doing is their own individualized certification program for their project managers, or if it's based on some of these other standards that are out there.
And do you know whether it's something that's more applicable in the Social Security Administration only, or would it have more general applicability?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I believe that they are using things like the PMP, and then there's another certification that I apologize, I don't know off the top of my head, but I think there's some internal training, but also they are, you know, using what's available out there and has been established as a industry standard.
And we're going to stop now to hear one last word from our sponsor. When we return, we'll wrap up our discussion about training in the federal government. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Well, welcome back to Fed Talk. We're talking about training in the federal government. If you have a question or a comment, you can call us 1-877-936-9333. That's a toll-free number. Or you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Carrie, do you have some ideas of some of the best practices, best examples of training today in the federal government?
Actually, Bill, the ASTD has an award for that. It's a best award. And in 2011, we had a great submission from the Naval Education and Training Command, led by Rear Admiral Joseph Kilkenny. And they absolutely won one of the best awards for their comprehensive program, which...
Why was it so good?
It was good primarily because of their total focus on career management, which means that when somebody walks in the door at the Navy, no matter what of the 100-plus occupations that they're going to start in, they are handed a learning and development roadmap from day one. So when you had asked earlier, should we model some of the military's use of learning and development, this was a clear answer for yes.
And this is the Navy doing this for its civilian employees.
Correct. Mm-hmm. It's across the Navy, actually. And so they have 100 plus occupations, and they were really able to demonstrate the retention of somebody who goes through their program and who uses continuing education or apprenticeship from 54 to 94%. So it was a very clear result that investment in learning and development had a big benefits.
And so in retention, and were there other metrics also that were used to?
Also measured a decrease in time, and that it was consistent that it was successful, but it definitely depended on the specific occupation. Some occupations required a set amount of time, and you couldn't make much difference.
So how did this, you would put somebody and give them an idea of where they were going to go? How did they follow up with people to make sure that they actually were on track?
Actually, each person is assigned an individual sort of tutor that will track their process throughout, and they are re-engaged at multiple steps in the process. So when we were talking about supervisory and management training, if someone is on the track, they don't need to wait until there's a position to fill and try to squeeze somebody in it. They've already been tracking them from early on in their career, already getting learning and development tools and
And they actually keep track of all of this information so that higher level executives and managers can see who's available to fill some of these gaps.
Absolutely. They even offer, when you take the training, it affects your ratings and rankings in the military. So you don't just have it in a file somewhere. Your title changes as you go through different training.
Okay. Does anybody else have any examples of some of the best practices they've seen?
Well, fortunately, the My Career at VA tool has been recognized as a model for government. And in fact,
we talked about that earlier.
Yeah,
in the show.
Alice Mueller-Weiss is actually a finalist for the partnership SAMI for management excellence. So that's really exciting for her, and we're happy for her. You know, I had mentioned the Career Fit tool, and we also have a career mapping tool. So similar to what Carrie was talking about, it allows people to see what their career path would be, what competencies they would need to develop. They can map it against their current position and identify where they personally have gaps, and then they can pursue learning opportunities to close those.
Tell me about the career mapping. How does that work?
Sure. Well, you can explore different positions and see kind of what your career path would be. So if you're an HR specialist, you can see, okay, what would I need to do to rise through this occupational series? But then you can also say, well, maybe I want to go into public affairs and look at a position in public affairs, either at your same grade level or a different one, and see, okay, well, that requires these competencies. I have some of those, but I don't have others. And so what would I need to do to achieve those competencies, to learn what I need to learn to be able to be qualified for that position?
And when people get this information, do the agencies make those opportunities available?
Well, part of the tool is a way to see what positions are available. And so it's really driven by the individual. And so they can, if they're interested in exploring whether they're outside or inside the VA, they can see, okay, well, I want to be a public affairs specialist. Are there positions like that available at the VA? And if so, where are they? You know, what would I be doing? And so it actually has a direct feed to USA Jobs, and you're able to build a resume and submit an application through the My Career at VA tool.
Jeanette, can you talk a little bit about what you see at Grant Thornton as some of the trends in training? Where are we going? Where are we going to be 5 years from now, do you think, with training?
I definitely see more of the leadership development types of trainings than the technical trainings. It's also the nature of our firm. We're management consulting. So, you know, we may do some technical training around, say, IT or security types of issues or topics, but leadership development, we're seeing a lot of requests, a lot of different types of leadership development. Some are focused on change management, some are focused on the HR spectrum, some are looking at building pipelines. So what types of trainings are appropriate to build a pipeline, starting with your new hires and really building them from day one to become the supervisors and managers that you'll need a couple years out?
Okay, and Carrie, you have I think you have a broader perspective with your company, even though I know you focus on the federal government yourself. Do you see the federal government's trends, training or in training being affected by what's going on in the private sector? It seems like the private sector is always held up to doing more emphasis on training than the government. I don't know if that's a myth or not.
Right. I definitely think and we feel the need to help government catch up to where the private sector is doing in training. The dollars spent, we can see that that's much higher in the private sector industry, especially in telecom and healthcare. And also in the tools used, where mobile became popular, the private sector started first, and now starting with the military, the government is starting to catch on, but we'd like to help them get further. Also with budget cuts, it's actually gives the government an ability and a need to start using some of the other technologies, using online more, catching up to where the private sector has already been in an effective use of online tools and training.
Do you see the value? I mean, it seems like if a private company sees value in spending more on training, it must affect the bottom line. I mean, doesn't that argument hold true in the government as well?
It absolutely does, and then enter the bureaucracy. So
and Congress,
right? Right, which, and some of the stories that are coming up in the media right now with lavish conferences affect what is able to be spent by the government in training, unfortunately.
Lavish and somewhat not so lavish and perhaps exaggerated.
Perhaps.
Stories about lavishness. But Carrie, where do you see the trends in the government training?
Definitely increased use of blended learning and engaged learning. So that means what we talked about before with the multi-generational workforce, using all of the tools and techniques available to someone in the learning field and making sure that they are relevant to your government learner. It means working more with IT to remove some of the security barriers that are placed. Often just being able to use YouTube, which can be a very valuable training tool. A lot of agencies don't have access to it. I've talked to a lot of people about our training tools, and they're literally at their desk with their government computer, but using their iPhone on the side because they can't access some of the tools. We do free webinars all the time, and often government employees can't even listen to that free tool.
That does seem to be a problem with the cybersecurity issue, which of course I think is something that perhaps Grant Thornton also does training on. Is that something to make the training more accessible to federal employees that can be worked on? Is somebody doing something about that?
I'm sure there's people working on it, and not just Grant Thornton, but across the board in consulting firms and private sector organizations that work with government. I think that some of the things like IT security, ethics, some of those are mandatory federal trainings, so they're not going to go away. And if anything, they're going to have to figure out how to integrate them into some of the other programs.
Yeah, but there's a lot of good training available. I know, for example, Carrie, I heard her talking a couple of days ago about some free training that her company puts on that may not be available because of somebody's overreaction to whether they should even be able to go travel across town to attend it, or whether it might be available on the internet. So those are some of the barriers, I think, that do you see efforts to tear down those barriers so that effective training can be available?
I definitely hear people from a variety of agencies will say the training looks great. I've got the budget for it, but you're serving breakfast, for example, and that would look bad to my agency, or I need to go through some extra steps to get clearance in order to attend this free training, or just to have travel reimbursement, especially if it's an overnight or a flight involved.
So, and Carrie, we've got just about 30 seconds left or so. One more time, can you tell? You've got the event coming up, so why don't you just talk a little bit about that conference that's coming up in October?
Sure, Bill. This is the Government Workforce Learning Innovations Conference, and again, it's a partnership between ASTD and the Public Manager, which are really helping set the standards for excellence in the training field, and this is particularly for government, really focusing on what is new in innovative in learning. So let's throw away what we are doing in the past if it's not working. Let's talk about the five generations in the workforce. Is the government ready? How do we get ready? Strategic planning, budgets, all of the above at governmentworkforce.org.
Okay. Sounds like a very interesting conference coming up. My many thanks to Lisa Spear from Federal Management Partners, Carrie Bluston from the American Society for Training and Development, and Jeanette Arquetta from Grant Thornton for being our guests here on Fed Talk. I will see you next week.
Thank you.